This episode of the Squawker Talk of Football podcast is sponsored by William Hill. Download the William Hill app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play to put the world of betting at your fingertips. All odds mentioned were correct at the time of recording and are subject to change. To download the William Hill app, you must be 18 plus and please gamble responsibly. On this podcast, we will be reviewing the 2020-21 Champions League group stage and making some early predictions based on the last 16 draw. Which team will lift the trophy? Who is the potential dark horse? Which player has impressed us the most? And who has been a massive disappointment? My name is Jake Entwistle and I was joined by some of Squawker's finest to discuss and analyse all of the Champions League action. As it's been so long, it's best to start with what has happened most recently in the world of Champions League football, and that is, of course, the draw for the last 16. So, to introduce everyone to any new listeners we might have, I'm going to go around the room and say, and ask you rather, which match from this last 16 draw are you most looking forward to watching? We will start with Chief Writer at Squawker, Mohamed Butt. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker.
I'm glad to be back, Jake. As for the match, I mean, come on, there's only one, isn't it? It's got to be a Messi versus Neymar. It's going to be great. PSG Barcelona, there's so much history in that fixture, despite the fact that it's not really been played that many times. Barcelona are an absolute mess. PSG aren't a mess, but also are always a mess at the same time. Injuries, will so-and-so be fit? I mean, their Neymar's saying he's going to be fit. It's going to be great. Two fantastic players. Is Neymar overtaking Messi to be the best player in the world now with Messi's problems? I don't know. It's just, there's so much narrative behind it. It's going to be great.
Narrative fueled and plenty of dribbling as well, I'm sure we'll get onto. Let's move on to Chief Editor at Squawker, Will Hall. Hello. Welcome back.
Thank you. Chelsea vs Atletico Madrid, just to get in there quick. I think that's the second most obvious option, but mainly because one of the most heated debates I see on social media is over how good a manager Lampard is. And because game plans often seem more important in knockout ties, Chelsea vs Atletico is going to give one side loads of fresh ammunition. And this is also the first time Lampard's going up against an A-list manager outside the Premier League. I would say Hansi Flick was A-list during the last 16. Arguably isn't quite A-list now, whereas Simeone is like the final boss levels for any up-and-coming manager.
And he's developed a new system. Kieran Trippier,
yeah,
back to his World Cup Barry Beckham role.
It also made me think of the story of when Simeone refused to shake Gary Neville's hand after a win over Valencia to teach him a lesson. And Neville said it felt like Simeone was strangling him gently throughout the game. It just seems like this guy really doesn't like English managers who were given big jobs early in their careers.
Well, because he had to earn it. He was at Atletico, he was at River Plate. He wasn't a success straight away. He took his licks, so to speak. And then he's like, right, now I'm the daddy.
Just on that matchup as well, for anyone that saw Squawker's passing networks for the draw, which I thought were really interesting in terms of just looking at how each team had set up, Harry Edwards, a Squawker writer, picked out the fact that both teams are absolutely trying to get their fullbacks as far up the pitch as possible. So in terms of a matchup, it's going to be pretty exciting to see Trippier, Chilwell, Reece James and Yannick Carrasco, who's used as left wing back again, as he is for Belgium. So should be lots of width and crosses in that one. Last but certainly not least, Chief Commercial Correspondent and everything else, Sam Long is back on the Squawker Talker podcast. Which matchup are you looking forward to watch most, Sam?
I am going for Leipzig-Liverpool, purely because I'm looking forward to seeing Nagelsmann reveal his outfit at Anfield. He likes to keep it tight usually. Jacket's often the centrepiece, as they are with most managers. And I think that he's going to pull out a Beatles-inspired collarless suit.
Oh, surely he goes all white to honour the Spice Boys, right? Come on.
I mean, no socks. Definitely nailed on. Whatever the weather, expect the trotters to be out.
Anfield attire is on the agenda then for your matchup. To bring some seriousness to it, Sam, I actually pick that as my match, if you're wondering how I'm getting on. Mainly because I once called RB Leipzig the dark horse because they played similar high-octane football to Liverpool. So I think there's going to be a good style matchup. They also made the most tackles in the group stage and won the second most duels. So they are going to be in Liverpool's face. And with Jurgen Klopp seemingly teetering on the edge, some RB Leipzig tackling when his half his squad is injured might push him over the edge. So we could see a Klopp explosion. And second on the most tackles in the group stage, by the way, was RB Salzburg. So it looks like it gives you wings to fly into tackles. Now we've got some of the more exciting fixtures out of the way, we're going to start the proper review of the Champions League, starting with which group winner had the toughest group, which team performed admirably to get first seed. You have Man City, Bayern, Chelsea, Liverpool, Juventus, PSG, Dortmund and Real Madrid. Will, I'm going to come to you on this one. Who have you picked as the best group winner?
I don't know if it's necessarily quite the same, but PSG won the toughest group because Group H had three very dangerous and quite wealthy teams, for all of whom going in, elimination represented big failure. And in that way, Group H was unique because all of the others only had two such teams at most. Group Bs were Real Madrid and Inter, not Gladbach because they'd never qualified for the knockouts before, not Shakhtar because they actually failed to make it through the groups more often than not. So someone in Group H was always necessarily going out earlier than their resources and squad quality suggests they should, which I don't think can be said for any of this year's other groups. So PSG won the toughest group, although for many, they were unconvincing. But even so, in their two most high-pressure games at home to Leipzig and away to United, where they really needed to win, they did so in perhaps the most mentally challenging way, by scoring early, sitting back and holding their nerve, or in the case of the United game, by retaking the lead after being pegged back and demonstrating some pretty strong in-game management. Plus, Neymar probably has the best highlights reel of the group stages. I think the Lyon injury is way less serious than it looked. The new captain, Marquinhos, is scoring clutch goals like a mini Ramos, Manchester United this season, Atalanta and RB Leipzig last season. Mbappe finally breaks his goalless streak after 9 games. And now they have a big chance to get revenge on a Barcelona team who probably inherited the baton from PSG as the Champions League's most traumatised team at the moment. So PSG, although, as I said, many found them unconvincing, have some bright sides and a good opportunity.
Mbappe breaking the record for youngest player to reach 20 goals, which could be immediately obliterated, depending what Erling Haaland does in the next round.
And I would say Mbappe, I would maybe suggest going through one of the biggest periods of negative scrutiny of his career after that Champions League goal streak.
Yeah, but positively, underlying metrics, which everyone loves, he had the most touches in the opposition box in the group stage. At least he's getting the chances. That's always the hardest, most difficult part.
Wan-Bissaka's not in the competition anymore to shut him down, so it should be all right.
Because he knocked him out. Sam, did you have something to add on PSG? I know you've had an axe to grind with them before.
Well, no, just on the flip side, I was going to say that another way to look at their group would be that Manchester United absolutely fudged it. After a away win in Paris, then spanking Leipzig 5-0, you simply have to progress from there to put yourself in that position, but then not finish off the job. I think PSG were the beneficiaries of Man United's poorness, although I think United probably deserve to go out purely for that comical goal they conceded in Istanbul.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, the perspective on things, because if they'd done it the other way around, then it would look like a sort of valiant near miss of a comeback, which their last game against RB Leipzig actually was as well.
Yeah, Istan Red Bull nearly happened. I was so upset that I didn't get to use it that I'm now trying to use it at every possible occasion. So the last time Barcelona and PSG met in the Champions League was, of course, La Remontada. And the story of lots of stats about PSG not being able to pass unless it was from the centre circle. So, Will, you've said they're the two most traumatised Champions League clubs, perhaps, right now. Who's going to win that battle?
Well, I'd say PSG are overcoming their trauma, whereas Barcelona is fresh. But it's tough to start again after losing the final the year before, I think, as PSG did, because you were alive in the competition right up until its conclusion and then go right back to square one. Mentally, even as a fan, I think that's tough to start over again. However, being finalists still enables teams to squeeze the maximum amount of knockout experience you can possibly get out of a campaign. So I always feel they're well placed to go deep the following season. We saw most recently how Liverpool followed a runners-up finish with a win. Bayern did it too in 2013. Well, in the aughts, it seemed like Liverpool teams like AC Milan, Chelsea, United always seemed to be going to finals and not always winning. So I lean toward PSG. But maybe I'd like to hear Mo go on about Barcelona for a bit before committing to an actual prediction. But one final thing I would add. If you remember from last year, my interpretation of the PSG curse is that by losing to Bayern in the final, they were kingmakers again. So of the last six Champions League seasons, the only one in which they weren't beaten by the eventual competition winners was when they got remontaded by Barcelona in 2017.
Even more narrative juice.
Make of that what you will.
And to add the analytical juice again, I'll be referencing and linking these to any podcast links, but based on their passing networks again and average positions, it's really interesting because Barcelona did a lot of shooting and chance creating, maybe because they had weaker oppositions, and all of their players apart from the two centre-backs are in the opposition half on average position. And for PSG, all of their players apart from the front three are in their own half. So they have had a more reserved approach, but they're almost relying and saying, Neymar, Mbappe, Di Maria, you are so good, you will win games for us.
One thing I would say on that, and I don't think it totally contradicts what you just said, is that they did seem to score goals very early in games, the ones they needed to win. So I think that might have contributed to the sort of sit back and soak up pressure approach.
Yeah, exactly. Even then, it's whereas Barcelona were just sort of, we play one way and we'll just keep trying to score and get Messi to shoot lots. PSG, as you said, maybe it's perceived as a more mature approach. But as you said, we're all eager to hear what Mo's perception of Barcelona is. For the first time in a long while, they failed to top their group. And for the first time since 2013, they lost a Champions League game at home. The first time since 2009, they'd lost one at home in the group stage. Messi shooting very much at will and not being able to beat 42-year-old Gianluigi Buffon was quite a nice moment, I think, actually, in the final game, mainly because Buffon notoriously is one of the goalkeepers he struggled to score against. And the fact Buffon's being wheeled out for some Champions League games, then managed to keep a clean sheet at Camp Nou, could give Petr Cech a reason to keep pursuing his comeback after his Chelsea under-23 appearances. But enough about really old goalkeepers. Are Barcelona the most dangerous runners-up?
Potentially? Look, right now, no. Right now, that you wouldn't put bet on them to beat any of the teams they're facing, especially not PSG. They're sloppy at the back. They struggle to score and they struggle to do anything. And their best players, honestly, have been a couple of 17-year-olds. I mean, they're both 18 now, but Pedri and Ansu Fati. So no, but at the same time, February is a long way away. It's actually going to be after the elections, which will be in late January. So the club might have an entirely different mood, entirely different direction. Players will be energized or energized. They might have managed to scrounge together, you know, some sort of money from somewhere to loan someone or something in January. You never know what could have happened. And that's the thing. Look at the team Barca have. It's loaded with talent. There's so much ability in that team. It's not functioning right now, but it's Messi, Griezmann, Ansu Fati, if he's back, Dembele, when he's fit, he'll be fit then, hopefully. You know, Frenkie de Jong, Pedri, Ricky Pucci, if he ever gets a chance. There's so much ability there. And they're talking now that even Piqué might be back for that, which will be huge. So potentially, it all depends on the state of things. But you look at the front, they are one of the most dangerous runners-up potentially as well. Because against PSG, the last time they played each other, they beat PSG 6-1. A lot of those players are still at PSG. PSG are, you know, as much as they got to the final last year, hooray for them, good on them. They bottled the final as well. You know, Neymar and Mbappe should have buried Bayern. They each had two really good chances and they put the ball straight at Manuel Neuer, tame finishing. Very unlike both of them to be so poor in a big game. They've not gotten over it. And as Sam said, they only got to the knockout rounds because United just so utterly capitulated. Cavani and Martial mainly. Martial had his shooting boots on at Old Trafford. Are PSG in the knockout rounds? Not likely. But there's definitely a chance for Barca. But not just Barca. You've got to look at the other runners-up. It's a bit of a Liga theme here. Sevilla, right? Now, they had a decent-ish group stage, not a great one, and they got absolutely smashed by it. They got Olivier Giroud-ed, right? On the one hand, you think, okay, anything that gets Olivier Giroud-ed isn't going to win this thing. But first of all, Jules Koundé wasn't playing central defence when they got Olivier Giroud-ed. If he was, I mean, look, Giroud's very good, but it wouldn't have been 4-0, right? That's the fun thing. He's the linchpin of the whole defence because his recovery pace and recovery instincts are second to none. Last season, they went 21 games unbeaten to end last season, and they won the Europa League. And they should have beat Bayern Munich. If in the Serie A had a shoot on, they would have beaten Bayern Munich in the UEFA Super Cup, would have gone 22 unbeaten. They have excellent cup pedigree. Julian Lopetegui is a great coach. They aren't playing too great right now. They're a bit hit and miss right now. But again, it's come February. This is a team that knows how to win, knows how to handle knockout football. So Sevilla, I would definitely keep an eye on. Atalanta, look, two weeks ago, I would have said they are definitely one of the most dangerous runners-up. Definitely. Thrilling team, pressing ferociously, attacking down the flanks. They were almost perfectly matched up. They drew Real Madrid in there. They're almost perfectly matched up to beat Real Madrid. But then Papu Gomez basically is saying that he's gonna leave in January. That's all the rumors are saying. He said on Instagram, what was it? I just wanted to the Atalanta fans, I just wanted to tell you that when I leave, you will know the truth of everything. You know me and you know the person I am. I love you. You're captain. So if he leaves, I don't see how they can beat Real Madrid. So these are conditional, these three. Sevilla, it's about them getting their act together. Barcelona, it's about them getting their act together. Atalanta, if Papu Gomez stays, they can beat Real Madrid. Real Madrid are not great. They're barely good. But if Papu Gomez leaves, they're going to lose so much leadership, authority and firepower that Real Madrid will just have the confidence to steamroll them. The only group runners-up that I think is genuinely, and this is why I think they are generally the most dangerous runners-up, is Atletico Madrid. They struggled against Bayern Munich a little bit to get themselves going in the Champions League. But if you look at them in La Liga, they have been so good. They conceded 4 goals. They've been outplayed precisely once, and that was against Real Madrid. So they have a problem against Real Madrid, and if they draw Real Madrid, maybe that will hurt them. But they've been so good in La Liga. João Félix is on a different level. Koke, Kieran Trippier, as you guys mentioned earlier, phenomenal production now they're getting out of him. The defence looks solid. The midfield looks solid. Marcos Llorente is actually a dangerous player. Angel Correa is finally showing his potential. Luis Suarez is a useful... I mean, he's not going to be much use in Champions League knockout rounds, but he's a useful player to play in La Liga, at least. Maybe they can save other players for the knockout rounds. And against Chelsea, that they match up so well against Chelsea, hitting them on the break. You know, I find it very hard to look past Atletico Madrid being the most dangerous runners-up.
And according to the odds on the William Hill app, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid are both 18-1 favourites, which are the highest group runners-up in the competition. So the odds would back you up in terms of your analysis there of those two La Liga sides.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that assessment of Atletico Madrid. If I had a list of opponents, I certainly wouldn't be choosing to play them. Simeone's side are a really, really sort of nasty prospect. I think Lampard summed up his admiration for Atletico in a really nice quote, which was, you could turn on the TV, start watching a game, and then turn the colour off, and you would still know that it was Atletico Madrid playing.
That's which I think a great quote.
So true. Not too many teams that you can say that about. And I had a little look at the fixtures that Chelsea have got around the Atletico Madrid game. They have to play Man United, Everton and Leeds in the three league games between the first leg, and then Liverpool immediately after the second leg. And as we all know, Atletico always make it a fight in every area of the pitch. Chelsea can't afford to let their percentages drop. And with those tough domestic games, I think it's going to sort of amplify how tough the challenge against Atletico is going to be.
Got some little stats to add to it. Atletico Madrid have produced the second most crosses in the Champions League this season, only behind Madrid neighbours Real, which will suit Mo's analysis and usual take of them.
Sexy Moes.
And I just think that we're going to really be able to tell if Eduard Mendy is an elite goalkeeper or just better than Kepa in this fixture. Because given Kepa's completely low confidence and Chelsea's quite porous defence last season anyway, I've been watching Mendy and I don't think he's as game changing individually as he's been made out to be because of keeping so many clean sheets, because he hasn't actually had to make that many saves. He's a much bigger presence than Kepa in terms of claiming these crosses that are probably going to be flying in from Kieran Trippier. But the reason this match, I think, is interesting, and as you said, make Atletico Madrid dangerous, is because I think it's going to provide a test for Chelsea that they maybe haven't had just yet. Similar to what Will said about Simeone being this A-list manager that Lampard is yet to come up against, I also think they haven't faced an elite team that plays in this way. So it's going to be really interesting to see if Mendy can stand up to that, and whether, as you said, the Luis Suarez, João Félix synergy can ruffle the feathers of Zuma and Thiago Silva, who, until the Everton game, had looked really good. It's impossible to make actual predictions this season, because one week you'll look intelligent, and the next week you'll be found out to have no idea what you're talking about. But this game, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on Madrid putting the ball in the box, Atletico Madrid putting the ball in the box, and how Chelsea deal with that. And I think it's going to be a bit tricky for them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as well. Because remember, Timo Werner, when obviously he left Leipzig last season, and everyone was asking Julian, I was like, oh, did you miss him? And he said, oh, actually, Atletico wouldn't have been a good opponent for Timo Werner anyway, because there's no space in behind the defence. So he wouldn't have played very well. So we had to come up with different solutions. So that's going to be an issue for Chelsea, is finding space to get Timo Werner on the run. And yeah, I agree about Mendy. I just think Mendy, he's good, but he's just like, the main thing is he's just not Kepa. And he's got a bit of confidence. They just, whatever it was, they destroyed it, Kepa's confidence. Like, they got Anthony Barry in, right, from Wigan to help their defence, help sort their defence out. Maybe they should get a new goalkeeper coaching, because they destroyed Kepa, and now Mendy's made, what, two mistakes in his last two games. So maybe they're going to destroy him as well. Let's hope not.
Are we joking about Petr Cech? But it seems like they actually have ideas to use him if he's playing for the under-23s, because being included in the Premier League squad is one thing, but actually being used as an overage spot for your under-23 team is highly intriguing. So in January, of course, with the transfer window open, you can re-add players. So if Petr Cech makes his way into the Champions League 11, that might be something to look out for. We've spoken about group winners and runners-up, so now we're going to look at the teams that have left us in the Champions League. And it's always sad to see some teams leave, especially the exciting ones that you thought were going to make it through. But sometimes it's quite funny to see the giants absolutely collapse. So Sam Long, I'm coming to you for this. Which team were you most sorry to see get knocked out?
Yeah, I've gone from Inter Milan from Group B. Eliminated from the group stages in the third consecutive season. Poor old Antonio Conte can't catch a break. The two 0-0 draws with Shakhtar really, really cost them. If you put those two wins on the board, then they're up on 10 points with Real Madrid. And the way it turned out, Inter actually could have afforded to lose both games to the biggest team in the group, which they did, and still made it through. But no, there's not even a place for them in the Europa League to take comfort in. It was a really odd group overall. Real Madrid turned up twice and somehow topped the group. For all the talk of the indignity of them playing in the Europa League for the first time since 94-95, when it was, of course, still the UEFA Cup, they turned up when it mattered most in the way that they always seem to do. Although I was sorry to see Inter go, it was refreshing to see Mönchengladbach make it through, who obviously, the opposite to Inter, made the most of their two games with Shakhtar. Absolutely smoked them twice, 5-0 and 4-0, I think it was.
I think it was 6, wasn't it, in the end?
6, exactly, yeah. If you're comfortably beating the worst team in the group twice, then you're giving yourself half a chance. The main reason why I was happy to see them go through is because it will have reaffirmed belief in some of the more unfancy clubs that they're in the tournament, not just to make up the numbers, because there were some very competitive groups this time around, but there was a lot where we saw a big gap between the top two and the bottom two. The sort of quick turnaround between games and unusual circumstances probably played a factor in that. But the group stages weren't vintage by any means. I think probably the Man United Leipzig game, which we've already mentioned, was the closest to sort of edge of the seat stuff in the closing games. My original point was that a total of 15% of the teams in the group stages this year didn't win a single game. Absolutely zilch. No wins out of 6. Now, that I don't think that is the makings of a spectacle that's interesting from the first whistle to the last, which is obviously UEFA's sort of goal. I think it's going to be a dangerous prospect if the big boys start to believe that they can get through in second gear.
It's actually a shame, I think, we didn't do predictions on this tournament, because if you were to go through every group before it began, making the safest predictions available as to which teams would qualify, and even in what order, your picks would probably look identical to the final standings, apart from putting Inter over Gladbach and maybe swapping Manchester United for RB Leipzig. That would depend on who you ask. But yeah, I think not only was it an odd group, it was the only odd group.
Yeah, I was quite underwhelmed by Champions League group stages. I think it was due to how condensed it was.
Yeah.
But then the benefit of it is that when you look at these last 16 ties, that is when it gets exciting. So it sounds like we're all actually pining for a European Super League to be built now.
It was heading to such a great spot. Like you say, Shakhtar were the worst team. Shakhtar were great. Coming into match day six, Shakhtar and Gladbach had been the two best teams in that group. But, Inter complete. I mean, obviously, talent-wise, Inter are brilliant, but they hadn't performed well near the Real Madrid. And obviously, Real Madrid had that amazing game against Gladbach. And Inter, I mean, they should have beaten Shakhtar, but for Romelu Lukaku standing and blocking Alexis Sanchez's head, they probably would have done. Yeah, it was just very funny watching that. The way that group unfolded. It's a shame to see Inter go again, because you want to see Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez make deep runs in the Champions League. You know, they're a good side, but they just can't get it. I mean, they've had tough groups, right? But they should have qualified out of at least one of them. Like, come on, guys.
That final game at the San Siro, though, was really strange as well. It was 0-0, and Inter obviously really sort of going for the win, knowing that would take them through. But Shakhtar were almost content with just taking the Europa League spot and going for the 0-0.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, Shakhtar, by the way, let's start paying more attention to them, because now Piatov is not their goalkeeper. Right? now they've finally moved on from Piatov. No, this, seriously, because he's been costing them for 10 years.
He was 55 as well, wasn't he? He was an old goalkeeper.
I've never understood how he stayed in goal for them for that long, but now they've finally moved on from him. Let's just keep an eye on Shakhtar in the future going forward. Then we'll actually become a very serious side.
Well, they had a decent run in the Europa League. Obviously, it was Inter that knocked them out, wasn't it, in the Europa League last season.
Yeah, so they got their revenge, yeah.
Got revenge in that sense. And as you said, I agree. I'm more sorry to see Romelu Lukaku go, because the man that it was constantly sort of bashed for a long time goes to Serie A, scores a lot of goals, scored goals in this group stage tournament. And then, as you said, Mo, it's probably the... He's not the reason they went out, but the defining moment of them being knocked out will be him blocking a shot from his own teammate. But he's been sort of making the claim that he's a top five striker in the world, always scoring for Belgium, always scoring in Serie A and in European competition. And now, unless Inter push on and challenge Milan in Serie A, he's going to have a season where he's not really considered. So I feel sorry for his sort of personal quest, but that's my heart speaking more than anything.
Hearing you mention there the moment where the ball hit him on the goal line when it was sort of destined for the top corner. Of course, it was him who scored the own goal that cost him in the Europa League final as well.
We're talking about sort of traumatic teams with Barcelona and PSG. It seems like Lukaku is as cursed as Antonio Conte, because his career started with missing the penalty for Chelsea in the Super Cup, was it? So
basically, it's just don't play PSG, because Lukaku had that miracle. Don't have a miracle win over PSG, because Lukaku had obviously one night in Paris for Man United, the amazing comeback. He scored twice in that game. And then Barcelona beat PSG 6-1. And since then, both of those teams have just had no luck in Europe whatsoever. Like, it just, everything falls apart the worst possible way. So don't have miracle wins over PSG, guys. It's never worth it.
Speaking about Gladbach there and how good they were in terms of scoring, of course, lots of goals as well, mainly against Shakhtar. We're going to talk about players specifically, and it is Alassane, a player that stole a lot of headlines. Will, in terms of the most influential players in this group stage, surely it's Gladbach's main man that steals that title.
Yeah, I think so. As they're the only distinguishing feature of the 16 teams to make the knockouts season, I would go along with that. He starts off relatively slowly with an assist in the 2-2 draw with Inter, flicking on a long grass cutter from Florian Neuhaus inside Gladbach's half. Depending on how much pace you think the ball actually picks up, it's either really cool or he's robbed a really cool assist off his teammate. But second assist in the 2-2 draw with Real Madrid, no dispute. It's a really good first-time ball across the box for Thuram to finish off. Also gets fancy assist for Thuram second, as it's his shot Courtois parries out. I think that's why you'll see in some places he's got four assists credited to him. But third game is where Gladbach really tear up the script, because it had looked like Shakhtar were going to be this season's surprise package, because they obviously beat Real Madrid. But then Gladbach thrashed them 6-0. Player scores a hat-trick, second of which is a worldie. Also gets an assist, I think. So it's contender for the best individual performance of the Champions League season so far. And I'm pretty sure overall it's the biggest win of the season so far. Then he misses the 4-0 win over Shakhtar. And the 3-2 defeat to Inter was kind of the Lukaku show, but Pleo also scored twice. And if his hat-trick goal isn't disallowed, that's it. Case closed. You wouldn't even have to make the argument. He would have had as many UCL hat-tricks as Samuel Eto'o, Didier Drogba and Karim Benzema just by being on two. But in the end, it's just the one hat-trick, one brace, three assists for the only surprise qualifier of this season's Champions League. And I think most goals and assists combined of any player in the UCL groups as a little cherry on top.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up if you hadn't mentioned. In terms of most goal involvements, he's top of the list, which is a pretty safe metric to base player performance on, unless obviously it's all in one game.
But to me, the one player I would say probably deserves to be named as the MVP was Neymar, purely because I know we've mentioned it before, PSG were dead and buried almost after the start they made. It wasn't very good. But when they needed someone to show up at Old Trafford and settle the game, it was Neymar that showed up. That first goal was sensational. He was the best player on the pitch. And then the last goal where he just walks the ball like fully 40, 50 yards up the field, puts Harry Maguire on the seat of his pants twice, calmly finishes as well. It was just, that was sensational. And then a hat-trick in the final game, which, I mean, okay, they had already qualified by then, but it was like their cherry on top. He's got the joint most goals, is six. Second only to Messi with dribbles. I think he's just, I think he didn't do it consistently like Player did, but he came on strong when it counted for PSG, and they really needed him to do that as well.
I think we're all pretty much in agreement that Alassane Player was the best player in the Champions League group stage, and perhaps the most surprising as well, given the fact that his output was so large for a team that wasn't expected to do much in that group. Neymar obviously makes a case with being joint top goal scorer, and there are other players. But moving to the opposite end of the spectrum, Lionel Messi, of course, dominated headlines with his perceived unhappiness at Barcelona. And of course, in the final game, was overshadowed, in quotation marks, by Ronaldo after he's scoring two penalties. But if you look at Messi's stats, and I know it's not all about the numbers, but in the Champions League group stage this season, Messi has had the most shots on target, created the most chances and completed the most dribbles. All pretty impressive attacking metrics that you'd like to have a lot of. But if we're talking about players that we expected even more from, surely Leo Messi's lack of open play goal involvement is probably the biggest indictment of Barcelona's failure to top the group.
Yeah. Like, unquestionably, if there was one player that's disappointed, it has been Lionel Messi. Because for years, for so many years, we were used to him being the best playmaker in the world, the best dribbler in the world, and also one of the two best scorers in the world. And, you know, that was just taken as norm. Like, the brilliance had been sort of normalised. And what's happened since football returned from the hiatus, his finishing has dropped off. His finishing hasn't... Everything else has returned at the same, more or less the same levels. He's not quite as quick as he was. He's lost a half a yard of pace, but he's still amazing with the dribble, still incredible. I mean, he's, like you said, most take-ons completed. He's attempted the second most take-ons, only behind Neymar, and he's actually completed more than they also, more efficient. He's created 16 chances. His passing is still amazing. He's still pinging the ball behind. He's, even though Barca aren't always moving, making a movement for him, he's making great passes. But his shooting is awful. It's absolutely awful. And I mean, you know, it sounds bad enough for the Champions League. 28 shots, 16 on target, zero open play goals, only score from the spot. 89 shots on target, La Liga and Champions League. 47 on target. 5 of his 8 goals have been penalties. He's only got 8 goals. That's bad enough. Only 3 open play goals all season. That's shocking. And that's the big problem Barcelona are having right now that I alluded to earlier. That's the crux of their issue. Is for years, they, especially the last couple of years, they've been able to rely on Lionel Messi to be their playmaker and their goal scorer and their dribbler. He can only do two of those three things still at an elite level. Either Barca need to make him their scorer permanently and ask him to do none of the play or very little of the playmaking, or they need to get a striker in or play a striker or just hope that Antoine Griezmann can make good on my 2-year-old prediction, him being top scorer, to actually score the goals so that Messi can just focus on the playmaking. Because he can still, as we've seen, he can still do the playmaking to an elite level. He's still an amazing, unbelievable playmaker, but he's finishing. And it's not, again, like you said, Jake, it's not that he's not having the shots. He's getting in position to make these shots. 11 shots against Juventus, 7 on target, 0 goals. In La Liga, he's taken over 10 shots in 4 separate games, not scored a single goal in any of those games. For years, Barca just took it as given. Messi will be our guy. Messi will save a score, create everything. You can't take that as a given anymore. It's finally happened. Messi's disappointed us, you know.
I contest a lot of this. Because in terms of him getting in positions to shoot, his shot map is pretty much all outside the box. You're not setting yourself up to score goals by taking really difficult chances to score. I think that's on him. He's deciding to shoot from these positions. Whether he feels because he's the only one that can score, which, as you said, has been pretty much the case for a long time, fair enough, but that's on him. And then almost as a reverse, his finishing, we know, is God-tier good. And in terms of non-penalty expected goals, because he's taking these bad shots, he was only expected to score 1.42 goals from non-penalty situations in the Champions League group stage. But based on where he was placing those shots, he was expected to score 3.3. So he's doubling his expected goals by where he's kicking the ball. And again, three goals expected from open play isn't anything spectacular for someone that has the most group stage goals in Champions League history, I think still is ahead of Ronaldo in that stat. However, it's a mixture of him trying to score really, really difficult chances by taking them from all outside the box, almost trying to score his free kicks from open play now, combined with the fact that soon he may just produce a shot that is rubbish and it will go in. I think the most disappointing thing about Messi's group stage was the fact that he has cemented this Messi dependencia even further. In that Juventus game that you mentioned, he was the only Barcelona player that hit the target. So, of course, the players around him may not be as great as they are, but there's definite trust issues in other people's ability to score. And yes, he's had the most shots, as I said, and most shots on target, and some of them have been decent efforts. But it's on him as well in his choice to take those shots that sort of needs to be remedied. And whether that's moving to another team and trusting other players or not shooting from 25 yards out consistently or less frequently at least, I think that's a reason. It's on his shoulders that he was disappointing. As much as Barcelona, as I said, and you've said, have not been coherent under Ronald Koeman. In the Champions League group stages, they were pretty much dominant in every game they had.
I would agree with that largely as well. He's been snatching a lot of shots. But I think, again, part of that is the reason why I mentioned Barcelona before mentioning Messi is the fact that Barca put so much on his shoulders and they're still putting so much on his shoulders, even though, as you're saying, right now it's quite clear he's not... I don't mean that his ability... You don't lose your ability to shoot. I think it's a lot of shooting and finishing, good finishing, comes down to decision-making. Like you said, when to take the shot. So... a lot of the shots he's taking, he's shooting into crowds or he's shooting when there's not much space. And a lot of it is panicked. And part of the panic, the reason what I focused on was Barcelona aren't coherent. And you mentioned it, the other teammates aren't necessarily stepping up, Griezmann in particular. But the system also isn't there. Like, he was a lot calmer when Ansu was in the team. It sounds absurd because Ansu is 17, well, he's 18 now, but he's so young. But without Ansu in the side, it's almost like Messi doesn't trust, he clearly doesn't trust Griezmann, right? That's the first thing. And, you know, he trusts Dembele, but is Dembele always fit? Does he trust the other players? He barely seems to know them. So it's a tricky situation for Barca, who have been... but yeah, I agree. It's not just Barca. That's why I said Messi's most disappointing. It is partly his own fault. He's making these really strange decisions. He's shooting like from distance where he just shouldn't be shooting from there. Should be playing more facilitative role. If it's not going to go in, Leo, it's not going to go in. Pass to your teammates, they might get in a better position. And yeah, like you said, Barca dominated all six of their games. Defensive errors, massive defensive errors, and poor finishing cost them against Juventus in the final group game. Yeah, that's why I tipped them as my the possibly most dangerous runner-up, because the potential for greatness or brilliance is there. It's just a little bit off right now. It needs to be aligned a little bit better.
So for the final part of the podcast, we're going to make Will's prediction dreams come true by doing exactly what he wished we had done for the group stages. We're going to be looking at the winners, dark horses, the English team that will go furthest at top scorer, and also another little fun metric that is Squawker's calling card. In terms of the outright Champions League favourites on the William Hill app, Bayern are the defending champions and the favourites to lift the trophy again at 11-4, followed by Man City, Liverpool, PSG, Juventus, Real Madrid, Chelsea, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. Sam, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Bayern Munich, defending champions, and I really can't see past them. It will be their seventh title, which will draw them level with Milan as the second most successful team in European Cup history.
Perhaps the question I should have asked is, does anyone not have Bayern as their choice to win the league? Because despite finally not winning a game, Hansi Flick has sort of got the best out of everyone in that team. And their draw against Atletico was mainly because they were playing a almost complete reserve squad. So if anyone doesn't have Bayern, say now.
No, I mean, it's good for them, isn't it? I was just saying this to my friend the other day. Every team in Europe is having a sort of weird off year. Like, no team is really shining. There's problems everywhere, except for Bayern.
Leverkusen are top of the Bundesliga.
No, but I mean, in the Champions League, though, Bayern are just like they look murdered. I mean, yes, the Bundesliga, they're saving all their nonsense for there. You see, in the Champions League, they've just been lights out. They have been absolutely impeccable. You know, like what they did to Atletico Madrid, my dear, in that first game. Look, they're a serious team, and Kimmich is going to come back as well, isn't he? So, like, now he's returning, the best midfielder in the world right now. How do you look past Bayern? Just duck and pray if he draws them. Poor Lazio.
There were a couple uncomfortable or vaguely uncomfortable performances in the groups, I thought, and Manuel Neuer's had to play well. But their chemistry is just really striking. For some reason, it makes them seem even more formidable. They give off such locker room vibes when they keep slapping each other in the face while celebrating goals.
Yeah, they're very macho, but they're hardworking. And I think, like you said, Lewandowski and Müller have an insane chemistry, and it's freaky to watch them play together. Like, they just understand where the other one's going to be at all times. Hansi Flick has everyone happy. There's no real moans in the squad about, oh, when I'm not playing, I want more minutes, that sort of thing. Everything about them is just terrifying right now. Like, obviously, other teams, Liverpool, Real Madrid, even Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, they put together a run, you never know. But Bayern right now just look like, oof.
And Lewandowski's only scored 3 goals so far, so probably more to come from him. Joshua Kimmich, I think, as he said when he picked up the Best Midfielder of the Year award. Or did he get Best Defender? I can't remember. He could probably win both. Anyway, only De Bruyne and Cuadrado have got more assists than him. And of course, he was injured, as we said. So it's probably a boring conversation to have, really, because there isn't another team that looks like they actually have a chance of winning. So to make it a bit more exciting, we're going to look at the dark horses of the Champions League. And by dark horse, the list I read off previously were all teams that were under 20-1 to win the Champions League. So this, you have to pick a team from the William Hill odds that are over 20-1. And those teams are Dortmund at 25-1, Atalanta 33-1, Sevilla and Leipzig at 40-1, Lazio and Gladbach at 100-1, and FC Porto at 150-1. So Will, I'll come to you first on this. Which dark horse would you be backing if you had to pick one of those?
For me, it's between Dortmund and Sevilla, because I think all the others on the list get knocked out in the last 16.
Grim reading.
I've learnt my lesson from the groups. I'm sticking with only safe predictions now. Dortmund versus Sevilla. It's kind of like the shiny new toys of football versus the old broken ones in the likes of like Munir or Campos, who've had these redemption arcs. Even Julen Lopetegui, in a way, after the sort of the disaster of his time at Real Madrid. Plus, you've got Luke de Jong, Alex Ferdinand, even Rakitic. But you'd have to think that some of Sevilla's Europa League knockout expertise will transfer over to the Champions League, at least in the early stages. So I would say Sevilla are the team that will go furthest out of all those teams you've suggested, you've listed.
Yeah, I would also say Sevilla. But again, it sounds, just keep an eye on Dortmund because they sat Lucien Favre. If Haaland is back and they have a new coach that gets them playing with that vibe again, I mean, Haaland and Sancho together can win pretty much any game. A phenomenal. Haaland has 6 goals. He's just an unreal goal scorer. He's going to be chasing Mbappe's record to smash it, which Mbappe just... I feel bad for Mbappe, man. He sets all these records and Haaland comes along and goes like, nope, breaking that one and that one. So Dortmund, yeah. But for me, Sevilla, they've got the know-how. I've said this earlier. They've got the expertise. Almost everything you'd want. Rakitic obviously has proven himself to be an absolute expert at negotiating knockout rounds with an underdog. Did it with Croatia in the World Cup. You know, Juan Jordan is playing excellently. They're more than a replacement for Ever Banega. They've got everything that you'd need. It's just finding goals is going to be maybe a little bit tricky because it needs Enesiri or Luke de Jong to be more consistently productive than they currently are, which is, yeah, that's going to be an issue. But I like Sevilla for a dark horse.
That tie in particular is quite interesting to me because Diego Carlos, who was rumoured to be joining every top team in the Premier League at some point because of his brilliant season last season, has a uncanny knack of conceding penalties and did it against Lukaku. And when he's been up against strikers that are can match his athleticism, he's often struggled. And if Erling Haaland is fit, I think we could be seeing multiple penalties conceded in that game because Joshua Kimmich is injured because he tried to take down Erling Haaland. So Diego Carlos versus Haaland in the knockout round, when we were speaking about matches that we were looking forward to watch earlier, this was in my discussion as well, purely because I can't wait to see what happens when those two clash. And then, as you mentioned, Mo, Koundé as well is such a good centre-back that I imagine Diego Carlos will be fronting up to Haaland and then Koundé will be sweeping anything if Haaland gets past, but you wouldn't put it past the Champions League goal machine to just burst past both of them and smash it into the net. So it's all going to depend on who Dortmund get as their manager. They're almost sort of too risky to choose as a dark horse, but any team with Erling Haaland up front is going to have a chance because he's a genuine phenom. Sam, who have you picked for your dark horse?
Well, I think it's interesting to see Barcelona and Atletico all the way out at 18 to 1 apiece.
Just missing the criteria.
Exactly. But I would have to pick Dortmund as well. Most people's second team, which others may argue is strange as people tend to dislike feeder clubs as a rule. But no, seriously, they've got so many likeable players. Haaland, who obviously we've discussed on countless occasions. Sancho, Reina, Bellingham. I'm willing them to get into the latter stages purely because they've got so many young players who I want to see test themselves against the real big boys. No offence to Sevilla, of course.
Sevilla, who've just got 35-year-old Jesus Navas still steaming down the wing. He plays like a young player, Sam. He's got the spirit of a young player.
Hey, he's a World Cup winner, man. Don't be too... Nobody messes with the Jesus.
Did you get that movie reference?
I did actually get that reference, but I didn't know if our listeners would be as caught up with my inability to get references. So I let it hang, but I did understand it's from Big Lebowski, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The underdog prevails again. Maybe it's a foreboding of Dortmund lifting the Champions League. Just to touch on some other underdogs that we mentioned there, Leipzig, I really think they might cause Liverpool an issue. But as you said, Will, it's hard to pick an underdog because the draw seems so one-sided.
They let Man United stick five on them. And Liverpool got Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane and Diogo Jota. I'd love it if they won. It'd be really good. It'd be really fun. Nagelsmann's a really good coach. But and at the other end, maybe, you know, they could do some damage to Liverpool's defence, especially with Van Dijk up. But, I mean, come on, that attack versus the Leipzig defence, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess Angelino has been great going forward, but he leaves an absolute ton of space that Salah has probably Ronaldinho licking his lips gif. Moving closer to home, we're going to consider which English Premier League side will be going furthest in the Champions League this season. Of course, it is only three, and none of them, they'll be happy to learn, were part of the underdog or dark horse discussion. So, English team to progress furthest, Man City are evens to go furthest, Liverpool 13-10, Chelsea 9-2. Will, who are you backing to go far?
I think Atletico Madrid will knock Chelsea out, or at least as they have the toughest last 16 draw, they're the least likely to progress, as is obviously reflected in the odds.
Yeah. Sensible.
get used to sensible new Will, guys. Man City, though, I'll sway a little bit here because Man City, who I'm not going to say will go furthest, under Pep Guardiola, they just smash generous group draws every year, resulting in winnable last 16 draws. And it demonstrably hasn't worked in their favour come the quarterfinal. I'd even say it works against them because I think tough tests in the groups, which you can fail and learn from without being eliminated, help strengthen the team over the rest of the campaign. And City are always so far away from the spotlight during these groups too that I I don't think they get the full Champions League's benefit of global branding and developing soft spots in neutrals. So I say Liverpool are the furthest, because even though they've looked pretty withdrawn in the group, bar the away win over Atalanta, they are probably the furthest away from full strength in the whole competition in terms of teams. So you'd hope by February they'll look a lot more confident and a lot more star-studded.
Or be even more injured.
Yeah, that could be. You'd have to hope not, but I mean, that could be the alternative. The rate they're picking up injuries, it wouldn't be a massive shock.
Yeah, I think that the break in the competition is definitely going to help Liverpool. There's some teams who would be wishing that the round of 16 was next week, but Liverpool would definitely be thankful for the break. Although I looked at their fixtures as well, they've got some tough ones around Leipzig, Man City, Leicester, Everton as well.
Leicester aren't tough for Liverpool. They eat Leicester for breakfast, mate.
A balancing act in terms of domestic and European as usual, especially when you've got an injury-prone squad.
I'm going to go against the grain. I think for the first time, I think City are going to do it. I think they're going to go further than every other English team. I just think they're due, man. They're so talented and they just manage to get in their own way constantly. I mean, like Will says, obviously they've always given Europa League draws in the groups. I don't know how they do it every time. But they get, you know, they get easy groups and they cruise through them, or the occasion they self-inflicted wounds like against Lyon last year. But they get through them. And then they get to the quarterfinals and they draw a Premier League team and they shoot themselves in the foot. Or, as in last year, they just shoot themselves in the foot. I think they're just due. There's so much talent in the team. I think Ruben Dias is a huge, huge addition, because he's not a ball-playing wizard, right, at the back. He's just a solid defender. He just gets on with defending, and it's just that is just transformative for City, because they don't have anyone else like that. Like, Otamendi was a rugged defender, yeah, but he was also absolutely wildly unpredictable. You couldn't tell what he was going to do 1 minute to the next. Ruben Dias, very reliable, 7 or 8 out of 10 every single game, and that's huge for City. And then look, it's even got John Stones playing well. And John Stones played. I mean, there was that big, let's see the picture of him and Maguire hugging each other after the Manchester derby, where it's like, finally, we're playing like we did in Russia again. You know, they've both been through the mill since the World Cup, John Stones especially. And I just think if they can choose between Stones, Laporte and Ruben Dias, or play all three together, I just think that's transformative for City. Their defence is not as laughable as it once was. And then it's just about keeping Aguero wrapped up in cotton wool so that they can actually have a bit of punch in the final third. And, you know, timing, hopefully that Raheem Sterling isn't going through a dry spell and that Riyad Mahrez isn't going through a dry spell. I mean, De Bruyne is going to be brilliant no matter what. He always is. The key is up front, which is weird for City because they're so good in attack usually. The key is just making sure that there's just a little bit of goal-scoring punch or Bernardo Silva. They can get him back to where he was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. Yeah, I think City are going to do it. I just think they're due. I think Liverpool have got too many problems. They've got injuries. They're phenomenal at attack, but they're leaky at the back. I think that's going to cost them in the end. Chelsea are going to go out in the round of 16, so that's them done. And I think City, they're due. They're just due, man. It's going to happen. They're going to win the thing. Don't get me wrong. They'll play Bayern Munich and lose 7-2, but still, they'll get there.
Well, they've kept the joint most clean sheets in the Champions League, as you said. Maybe it's to do with the draw. Porto, alongside them, have kept the joint most, so maybe there was an agreement in place there. And their next round draw against Gladbach, they have history, and Gladbach's Twitter account were sort of aware of that themselves. Usually part of the group that Man City draw, this time they had to wait one round extra to get there. My perception of Man City, just to chime in, is that Manchester derby made me lose all faith in their ability to score and also be fun. One of the most boring performances from Pep Guardiola I've seen. And maybe, yeah, boring will win them games. And maybe that is the reason they will go far in the Champions League. But the biggest sin of them all was, yes, John Stones is back. And yes, Ruben Dias looks good. But at some point in the second half of that game, they had 10 right-footed outfielders. And no team that does that deserves to go far. And I'm not even left-footed. So this isn't left-footers union. Come on, you need one left-footed player. Otherwise, you're just going to end up playing in the same area of the pitch for the whole game. Should they get further in the competition, this stagnant sort of defensive-minded, double-pivot, right-footed 11 really has put me off Man City.
If Man City were to go all the way playing in this style, then you know that it would keep Guardiola up at night.
Yeah,
the thing is, it's not even defensive. Jose Mourinho at Spurs at the moment is giving an absolute clinic in how to absorb pressure and then unleash world-class forwards. Touched on it briefly when we did the Premier League preview pod that if Kane and Son were going to be firing, they might have a chance, and they've gone beyond anyone's expectations. But Man City are not conceding goals, but they've also got a lot of the ball. So it looks like they're just keeping the ball to not concede rather than to keep the ball and score. And it's, I don't know why I'm so passionate about it, but...
Well, because it's more Spain than Barcelona. That's the thing. It's not Barca 2009, Barca 2011. It's Spain 2010. It's like, yeah, it works, but it's not the prettiest thing. And that's the one thing you could always at least expect from Guardiola. Like, there may be a hot mess at the back, but they'll be fun to watch and they'll thrill you. And they're not thrilling even in the least. They're quite dull, frankly, to watch right now. Maybe Aguero coming back.
Your man is deserting his principles, Mo.
I mean... Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah, he looks like he's been so afraid of so many repeated like failures. He's like, okay, you know what? Let's just go win the goddamn thing. Like, he's doing a Wenger in 2006. Wenger, beautiful proponent of attacking, gorgeous football. 2006, he was like, right, guys, I want to win this thing. So it was just defensive. It was counterattacks. It wasn't pretty, but Arsenal got to the final. And then they lost to Barcelona, which is what's going to happen to City. They'll get to the final or to semis. They'll face Bayern and they'll lose anyway. And Pep will be like, oh. And that'll be the end of it. Pep will never be the same again.
There's quite nice parallels there as well, because Lehmann set the record for most clean sheet or most games without conceding that season and then decided to get sent off. And Edison is the exact goalkeeper that you could see keeping all the clean sheets in the world and then booting someone in the head on the halfway line.
So
maybe we're about to see a repeat of that. Who knows? Moving on from teams to individual players now, we're going to be discussing the Golden Boot. And we've already spoken about Alassane Plea and Neymar having the joint most goals along with Haaland, as well as Morata, who is fifth favourite on the William Hill app for goal scorer, top goal scorer in the Champions League. Haaland at 9-2 with Lewandowski, Neymar 5-1, Cristiano Ronaldo 13-2, Morata 10-1 and Lionel Messi 14-1, followed by numerous others. But before discussing this, I just wanted to drop a few almost pointless shooting statistics that may alter your opinion. Enoch Mwepu had more shots without scoring than any other player in the Champions League group stage, 15 shots, none scored. Marcel Sabitzer had more shots without hitting the target than any other player, 10 and none on target. Sergio Aguero, who we just discussed, had more shots while maintaining a 100% conversion rate than any other player. 2 shots, 2 goals. And Alvaro Morata converted more big chances while maintaining a 100% big chance conversion rate than any other player. 5 out of 5. And I wanted to pause on him specifically because that is the exact opposite to the reason why he was hounded out by Chelsea, because he was perceived to be missing sitters at an incredible rate. And not only has he scored 6 goals, which is joint top, he also had 3 disallowed for offside.
Was it in one game as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, against Barcelona. Yeah, literally a hat-trick of offside goals. And they were all like those fractional ones. Well, one was actually offside, like by a yard. The other two were just like literally inches in it.
But because of the new rule, they were all let to play out. So he actually physically got to convert them all. And it becomes even more ironic because the narrative has already started that Timo Werner misses sitters all the time and has been cursed again by Chelsea. But getting the chances is the most important. So don't worry about Timo Werner. And also, it was just so funny to see Morata proving that, yeah, he may not be the most consistent, but he is a good striker. And there's a reason why people keep buying him for £60 million. And I actually think, although they're playing Porto, as we said, that have the joint most clean sheets, the passing network Porto had was completely leaving the middle of the pitch alone. And I guess passing network is when they're on the ball, so they will defend a bit deeper. But given Alvaro Morata's prowess in the air and being a more traditional finisher, if Juventus go far, I can see him getting more. And I think he'd be a decent outside pick for the Golden Boot, although that goes against everything that everyone thinks of him as a player, I guess. So that's my little intro out of the way. Will, who have you gone for top scorer this season?
Well, Neymar, in one sense, is the best pick because he takes penalties and is joint top with 6 goals already. But with top scorers, the most important thing, and this is going to sound so obvious, but... is that your team stays in the competition so you can keep scoring. So because I don't know who wins out of PSG and Barcelona, the safer shouts for me would be players from Juventus, Manchester City or Bayern Munich. So that leaves Alvaro Morata looking like a pretty sensible pick. But Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, is only 2 goals back. And I think being on penalty duty will make up for that gap. And it almost comes down to who Juan Cuadrado decides to find with his crosses. I would say Ronaldo, though, for the penalty factor.
And of course, he is Mr. Champions League knockout stage as well. So expect some sort of hat trick in a quarterfinal second leg. And as you mentioned there, the Cuadrado top of the assist rankings, just to confirm that. So, yeah, two people that are really good at heading and playing really well together up front. Maybe it'll be a contest between the two Juventus strikers. Interestingly, of course, Lewandowski is joint favourite despite being 3 goals back. That's probably because, as you said, we're expecting Bayern to go all the way. Is anyone backing Louis from 3 goals behind?
Tentatively, because I do think they're going to massacre Lazio, and I think he could easily score 5 goals in that tie over the course of those two legs. So tentatively, I think, by the way, the Morata, I think, actually is a good shout, because part of the reason he scored a lot of those goals in the group stages is because he scored them from crosses, from Cuadrado's crosses, because normally when you have a striker like him in the box, right, the crosses coming in, defenders focus on him. He's playing with Mr. Champions League. No one's focusing on Alvaro Morata. He's constantly getting a run on defenders because everyone's focusing, oh, got to guard Cristiano, got to guard Cristiano. So then he just comes steaming into some space and Cuadrado's a great cross with the ball. So I genuinely think Morata's not a bad shout. I was obviously going to take Antoine Griezmann again to finish up. No, seriously, I think I'll back Lewandowski from 3 goals back. I do think they're going to absolutely massacre Lazio, which is going to, he'll get like about, it'll be like the old Arsenal ties, you know, when they scored 10 over 2 legs. So
stop bringing up painful Arsenal memories.
Sorry.
Crying in the club. Sam, who have you gone for?
Well, I think sort of the 8-9 mark is going to be enough to win it this time around, which will be the first time a tally not in double figures is the winning total since Messi's 8 in 09-10. But yeah, I'm picking Ronaldo as well. I think he's going to turn it on against Porto. He's going to be really motivated because he missed a couple of the group stage games. And with Messi not playing that well, I think that he knows that it's there for the taking, really. And also, as a sort of outside shout, I've gone for Ferran Torres at Man City. He's on four. He's been looking pretty good in the Champions League. So if they progress, then I could see him getting a couple more as well.
He's at 40-1 with Alassane, a player that we mentioned is most goal involvement so far. Interestingly, on 40-1 is Duvan Zapata, which looking at stats, he's had the most big chances in the Champions League this season. So Atalanta, again, tough tie against Real Madrid, but Zapata's on 3 goals. And if they go far, as we said, no Papu, no party, but Zapata is a striker that gets in good positions. Could be someone to look out for.
He hits it hard too, man. Oh boy.
And the final stat we're going to discuss, purely because it is a squawker podcast, is going to be take-ons. Lionel Messi and Neymar had the most in the Champions League group stages so far this season. The only two players with 20 in the group stage. But as I did for the shots, I've got some dribbling stats just to whet the appetite before you make your picks. Eden Hazard completed more dribbles than any other player without being dribbled past himself in the Champions League. He completed 10 out of 11 as well, which is impressive. Most take-ons completed, as I said, was Messi 23 and Neymar 21. Neymar also is the most fouled player at 24. So if people stop kicking him, maybe his numbers will go further up. Talking of fouls, Luis Suarez won more fouls without committing a foul than any other player. 8 fouls, 1 none committed. So master of the dark arts strikes again. The opposite of that, Martin Skrtel conceded more fouls without winning one. 9 fouls conceded. And the most times a player was dribbled past was Rafael from Istanbul. So he's not in the knockout stages, so no one can pad their stats against him. The final one is Francesco Acerbi from Lazio completed more take-ons while maintaining 100% dribble success rate than any other player. And he's a centre-back, 9 out of 9 from him. So a way off from Messi and Neymar. And as you said, Bayern are probably going to test that. But
I mean, yeah, try dribbling out from the back against Bayern. See how that goes.
Well, that's something to look out for. If he dances his way up the pitch, Lewandowski might not be getting that golden boot after all. The contest is pretty much between Neymar and Lionel Messi. So who do you think it's going to be?
Well, I mean, in 16-17, Neymar got 50 dribbles. That was the most. In 17-18, Neymar got 51. That was the most. In 1819, Messi got 35. That was the most. In 1920, Messi got 57. That was the most. They do share this particular title, which obviously is largely a consequence of Eden Hazard never really going that far in the Champions League. Because I think he would be up there with them if he did. I mean, I'm just going to back Messi because I think Barca will somehow beat PSG inexplicably. And then he'll just rack up. They might just get dumped out in the quarterfinals again, to be honest. But he'll get enough dribbles over those next 3-4 games that he'll be top and no one will catch him.
To give some background on people that could be considered close by, João Félix is on 19, so only two behind Neymar. If we're backing Atletico Madrid, he could be interesting. Lucas Ocampos and Kylian Mbappe are then on 17. And then there's a collection on 16 and 15 below that. So, Will, do you have any thoughts on the most important battle in the Champions League?
Yeah, the one that really counts. Yeah, I still kind of think it's essentially the same question as who do you think will win out of PSG and Barcelona? And because I leaned slightly towards PSG earlier on in the podcast, I will say Neymar.
Doubling down. Sam, final word on most dribbles completed in the Champions League this season.
Yeah, I'll go for Neymar as well.
And with that, we have wrapped up this Champions League review and preview. Thanks everyone for listening, and thank you to William Hill for sponsoring this podcast. Hopefully, we'll speak to you soon.